Welcome to the big interview on today's show, and I'm very pleased to be joined right now by Craig Callahan. He is founder and president of the Icon Funds. Icon Advisors is the firm. It's iconadvisors.com, and I'll point out they spell advisors correctly. That means with an E at the end. I know a lot of people spell it with a different vowel. They shouldn't, but these guys get it right. iconadvisors.com. By the way, he also runs the Icon Opportunities Fund, I-C-O-N-X, the ticker symbol there. Craig Callahan, welcome back to Money Life.
Good to be with you, Chuck.
Always a pleasure to chat with you. And we've got some really interesting market times that we are looking at. But you look at the market a little bit differently than a lot of folks. You have some measures that you tend to rely on. So I'm always curious how you see the market. So let's start there. How do you see market conditions right now?
Well, it all starts with value. We never use PE or price to book. We think they're deficient. We compute intrinsic value. And right now, we see the market to be priced about 9% below where we find fair value. So we would expect the market to move 9 to 10% higher over the next year.
9 to 10% higher over the next year does not mean, hey, it's going there in short order and it'll stay there, or it'll go there in a straight, slow line. So how worried are you about things that would knock the price even further down, like any of the headline risks or any of the other things that make the market go a little nutty these days?
Well, in terms of the tariffs and trade, that seems to be built in already and sure has bogged down the market the last few weeks. The Fed seems pretty docile and behaving themselves, so it would have to be an event, something other than those two, to set it back. But we don't have short-term market timing capabilities. When I go to our value readings, their best predictive abilities are out about a year to a year and a half.
Okay, so that means we've got some, you know, positive outlook here and some reason to believe that we can see the market go up. Is there an actual catalyst, however? I mean, as a general rule, it's not just, hey, things are underpriced, so they settle back up. There needs to be something that convinces everybody that they want to be buying again. So even though it's positioned nicely, is there a catalyst for you?
Well, earnings, there was a little pause in earnings. We had two quarters where earnings didn't grow quarter over quarter. But the outlook now for the second half of this year and into 2020 is pretty good for earnings. So as earnings grow, value grows, and in our view, prices just try to keep up.
You guys look particularly at Icon at small cap. You're looking at small cap opportunities. Is that space poised for slightly better than the rest of the market? I mean, as a general rule, historically, investors would, using the Ibbotson-Sinkfeld study, say 10% is the long-term expectation, 10% annualized on large cap stocks, yeah, and somewhere closer to 12% on small caps. Small caps have trailed large caps dramatically in this bull run, but are we in a position where things go back to that historical norm?
One statistic to look at would be the PE on the S&P small cap 600 compared to the PE on the large cap 500. That's right near its historic average. Naturally, the small caps typically have higher PEs by about 25%. That ratio has just slightly tipped to where small caps are relatively cheap compared to history, but not by that much. So I can't point to that and give you a strong answer one way or another and say, boy, these small caps are really going to come on in terms of that historic relationship. In terms of earnings, for example, in 2020, next year, a survey of analysts, they're calling for year-over-year growth in earnings of 11.2% for the large cap 500, but 19.1% for the small cap 600. So pretty historically normal where small cap earnings grow faster than large cap, and analysts are calling for that for the next couple of years.
Interesting. And, you know, you talk about your model beginning with valuation and how everything looks at valuation. So is there a reason at all? Does growth ever factor into it when you consider that on the big picture level, we are seeing GDP growth slow, when on the micro level, we have plenty of companies that are at or near record earnings levels, which means that there can't necessarily be a lot more growth going forward. They're already at record levels, and you can't necessarily keep setting records forever. So if you look at some signs that growth is not going away, but it might be slowing a little bit, Does that not enter at all into the valuation side of things and change any of the value picture for you?
Indirectly, it does. All else equal, if earnings grow, valuation grows, and then prices try to keep up. So all else equal, if I have two stocks equally underpriced, I'd rather own the one that's going to grow its earnings, because that gives me an upwardly moving target for price. So that has been the case this last 10 years in terms of value investors and growth investors. It's been a much nicer, easier setting for the growth investors. There's been a lot of frustration for the value folks because they've bought bargains and they just haven't been what investors wanted.
Yeah, there's no question. Value has been, I think, frustrating for a lot of folks. Now, as you look out and you look broadly across the market, as you said, 9 to 10%, 9% under fair market. That's why you believe the market can gain 9 to 10% over the next 12 months. But not every sector is created equal. Where are the hot spots? Where are the cold zones?
In terms of just pure value, financials stand out as being the best bargains out there. There's a view, very popular view, we disagree with it, but there's a very popular view that banks can't make money in a flat yield curve, and we think that's wrong. We think they can do just fine. There's also a view that banks can't make money in this low interest rate environment, and again, we think that's wrong. Every quarter, banks just keep growing and posting nice earnings. So they're the best bargains, but right up there with them, industrials, consumer discretionary, still easy to find attractive price stocks in those sectors.
And the cold zones, the places that it's not so easy to find anything?
Energy is the odd one because there's seven industries within energy, and two of them are attractive and the others aren't. So it's a real dispersion within the energy sector. You have to be real industry specific.
So let's talk that out, because my audience hears energy and some of them think utility companies, and some of them think ExxonMobil's and the big oil companies. So which are the areas that are good and which are the areas that are bad?
Well, we work off of the Standard & Poor's GICS, Global Industry Classification System, and you're right, utilities are their own sector. Within energy, over the last few years, we've liked the exploration and production companies. When the price of oil dropped from 115 down to around 30, there are a lot of acquisitions there, so companies could buy out other companies pretty cheap and greatly expand their production and output. So we like them. Just the opposite, a group called Oil and Gas Drilling. The drillers look very overpriced to us. So two different worlds within the energy sector.
When I was setting up that question and I mentioned utilities, you said, oh, no. Now, of course, you have subsequently pointed out that, well, it's not technically part of the energy sector. But I got the sense from hearing you talk about it that, no, utilities is not an area that you want to be putting money right now.
Well, if we back up a little bit, the last 10 years, this tremendous bull market, the leading sectors, if you just bought and held, going back to March of 2009, leading sectors have been consumer discretionary, information technology, industrials, and financials. And we believe that same theme is still in place. So the so-called recession-proof defensive sectors like consumer staples, utilities, what used to be the old telecommunications, they've participated, but they've been sluggish. So not only the 10 years, but that's especially true this year off of the December 24th lows. So utilities are doing okay. They're just not part of the leadership.
Domestically versus international. I mean, I know you are primarily focused domestically, but with you seeing a market that's 9% undervalued and has that as a growth target for the next 12 months, is there reason, in your opinion, for people to be thinking they could do better internationally?
We do have a broad international fund, and we have a more specific emerging market fund. And quite interesting, right now our valuation readings on average for international are the same as the U.S. So we're based on value, we're very indifferent. You get a little more risk going international, but you also get some lower correlation. But in terms of just return potential, they look about the same right now.
And does that also apply to emerging markets if we make it specialized?
We value 42 countries And if you looked at the top 12 or so, most of them are emerging markets. So when we rank our countries, the emerging markets are more toward the top half among the better bargains.
So maybe a slight favoring of emerging markets as opposed to international on average.
Correct.
Okay.
Based on value.
There you go. So again, you're agnostic basically when it comes to international versus domestic, but maybe a slight favoring in terms of how the market looks in some of the emerging markets. Craig, it's great stuff, and I always learn so much when I chat with you. Thanks for taking the time out to join us.
My pleasure, Chuck.
That's Craig Callahan, everybody. He is the founder and president at the Icon Funds. If you want more information, go to iconadvisors.com. And again, if you want to learn about, say, one of his funds, try Icon Opportunities. That's I-C-O-N-X, but they run an entire suite of funds, and you can get more information by going to the website. All right. We will be up next in a moment talking about new legislation that has been proposed in Congress that could help you save a lot more for retirement. But of course, the fact that it's been proposed doesn't mean that it's going through. We'll be talking with the general counsel at T. Rowe Price when we come back to find out what they think about this new legislation. Stay tuned. This is Money Life.